the employee can't be checking on the process. There's no contact with the Department of Labor. So it's a little different for them, especially if they've been very hands-on during their non-immigrant visa process and their H-1B process. The PERM process is very employer-owned.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that, but I do think that there is a certain amount of representation of the employee's interests that goes hand-in-hand with it. So, I do agree with that, and that is very important, a great point to make, so that everybody kind of knows their role and their obligations. It is employer-driven. It's their decision, and we'll go into some of the areas where the employees have special concern. So, the application also requires a test of the local job market, the recruitment, and I think Maggie's going to talk more about that in just a minute. There's an electronic filing, so there's no paper involved. And the form that is filed is an ETA 9089, and it's a very deficient form. So that's one of the challenges, is that some of the information that you would like to convey to the Department of Labor about this case to get it approved, there's no place to put it on the form. There's not a specific field, and so you have to improvise. That's another challenge with the ETA 9089. The recruitment is going to show that there was not a qualified, willing, able, or available U.S. worker, and a U.S. worker is a citizen or a permanent resident. So folks in non-immigrant status or who don't hold a status are automatically disqualified. And, you know, as we mentioned, the wage has to be paid, and the employer has to realize that that wage, even if they're not being paid right now, will have to be paid in the future when the permanent residency is approved. Another thing that the employer and the employee should realize is that certain information and documentation that may be confidential or sensitive is going to be required somewhere in the process, and that should be addressed early on so there's no surprises. So if you're talking about what are the minimal qualifications for the job, and the employer is saying, well, it requires a master's degree and 3 years of experience, but the employee being sponsored doesn't have a master's degree at the time they were hired, then obviously that can't be the minimum requirement. Also, way down the line, when it comes to the I-140, the employer will have to show financial ability to pay the wage, so they're going to have to know ahead of time that there might be tax returns or financial statements that will be required of them, and they have to be willing to provide those. So the position requirements, this is super important to strategize with the employer, because this is a source of friction between the employer and the employee, because the employee generally would like to have as many minimum requirements in the job position as possible, because that will make the screening process such that others won't qualify, but the foreign national will, which would make for a successful PERM. So that's the balance, trying to put the true minimum requirements in the application, but not so many that the Department of Labor would say this job is being tailor-made or described just for this foreign worker. And also, the more minimum requirements you put in, the higher education, the more experience, that will drive up the wage. So you start off with questionnaires. You get the information from the employer as to what they believe the minimum requirements should be. And then you compare that to what the foreign worker actually has to make sure it's consistent. And then you start doing your research. What job classification code will the Department of Labor use for this position? So the Department of Labor uses the ONET. Even though there are probably over 10,000 different jobs or careers that are out there, there are only about 1,000 or less than 1,000 that have codes assigned by the Department of Labor. And the codes that they use will determine what the salary should be, the prevailing wage, for what level. And the levels are from 1 to 4, with 1 being an entry level with very minimal experience. And the level 4 is usually no more than 5 years of experience. Once you get to 5 years of experience, it will throw you into a level 4, which can present quite a bit of challenge if your entry-level wage is only $60,000, but then with just 5 years of experience, the Department of Labor is saying, oh, well, now the wage for someone with 5 years of experience and say, a bachelor's degree, is going to be $90,000. It doesn't reflect reality. So that is one of the problems with balancing the minimum job requirements with what the prevailing wage determination may end up being, and you have to try to predict what that will be. So the minimum requirements have to be the true minimum requirements. You can't tailor them. The employer can't require excessive or unusual job requirements. And most importantly, as Faye and Maggie mentioned, the employee cannot be involved in the process or influence the process.